morning, friends. Yes, I'm Lloyd, an alcoholic, and a member of this wonderful program known as Alcoholic Anonymous. And I'm sure that my story isn't a great deal different than others, only that just maybe that I went a little bit farther. But Mama and the four children had all the heartaches and tears as any practicing alcoholic in the family. But I find that this is the only way that can give me peace of mind and give me happiness and keep me in a frame of mind so that I am able to think good of you instead of bad. Now, as I say, that maybe I went just a little bit farther. Maybe, just maybe, drank a little bit more. Don't know if I got any sicker. But I do know that a lot of things happened to me along the way. My friends, I didn't come up here tonight from San Bernardino, here to Palm Springs, to brag about my plan. Because it doesn't make a pretty picture. But I did come in order to tell you there is no hopeless alcoholic. I was classed as a hopeless chronic alcoholic and put into a mental institution there to, with no hope or little hope of ever recovering. But through a power greater than me, and through this wonderful way of life, I was able to come back. No, please don't think that I'm trying to beat anyone's story. But I have been asked to tell what alcohol did to me. After being released from this mental institution and coming to this wonderful way of life, my book told me, and you told me, that I must tell what I used to be like. What happened to me along the way before I got here? And also try to tell you of some of the wonderful things that happened to me since I've been here. Well, I'm going to try and do that tonight because I get a lot of help out of it. But when I came from this mental institution, I didn't want to do those things to tell you about all the heartaches and tears of my wife and my four children. I didn't want to tell you of how that my children would go hungry here in America. I didn't want to tell you about you could open the icebox and find my fifth of wine and no milk for the kitties. See, I didn't want to tell you of all these heartaches and tears. I wanted to get up here and I wanted to tell you about the time that I swam the champion of the world and beat him. Now, those are the things I wanted to tell you. I wanted to tell you all about the wonderful guy that I used to be. The kind of a guy that would sit at a bar and buy a guy a drink to listen to me tell him what a wonderful guy I used to be. Now, those are things that I really wanted to tell. And it hurt me very bad to get up and say anything against myself. Although I had read the book, knew that I must do to remain sober. But still I wasn't satisfied, so the wife and I got into our car and we drove back east and met and visit with Bill Wilson, the co-founder of this program, and I told him of my problem. And he said, as long as I was ashamed of what I did, then I would help myself and no one else. To come back to California and to continue my work. Well, my work and my life work happens to be you, the alcoholic. And this wonderful program known as Alcoholic Anonymous. I came back and I began to tell of these horrible things that happened to me. Now, let me begin tonight by telling you that I definitely believe that I was born an alcoholic. From what medical science has taught me, I believe that I was born with this chemical makeup of the body that when I take in that first drink, I become alcoholic. You have your opinion of whether you might cross them borderline, invisible borderline, and become alcoholic later in life, which I definitely believe that people do. Some drink for 25, 30, 40, 50 years before crossing the invisible borderline. But in my case, I don't believe there was, because sodomy and seed. Now, let me repeat again before I start into this horrible story. And in a way, it does hurt me. And I feel hurt when I tell these horrible things. But then I feel good over it too. You can be hurt and feel good at the same time. And I think you'll understand when I get through talking what I mean about that. No, I didn't come up here to brag about my past or try to beat your story and tell you that I was much sicker than you and all of these things. No, I came here thinking maybe I might help myself. Number one, help myself. Because I am a selfish man. I must be a selfish man and I must come first because I am the most important fellow on the face of this earth and I must make it that way because it is my sobriety. I must come first. All other things must come second in my life. Before I put many things first, the bottle, maybe my friends, maybe a job, a new automobile or something, but I cannot do that and remain happy, remain sober, remain in a peace of mind that I can enjoy life and maybe pass it on. So I didn't come up here to brag to you. I'm a boy and a hillbilly. And I was born and raised in the Ozarks of Missouri, down deep in the hills. I'm a boy, too, that came from a broken family, but that didn't cause me to be an alcoholic, I don't think. My father and mother separated when I was 2 years old and my grandmother taking me to a raise, a great-grandmother. At the age of 2 and at the age of 13, that poor soul died and was buried. Now, I love this soul more than anything on the face of this earth. She meant more to me than anything. My grandmother had tried to teach me right from wrong and good from bad. Teach me that there was a God in heaven, that there was a hell. But God bless her poor soul, she taught me fear instead of faith. She taught me that there was a God in heaven. But she also taught me that he was a punishing God. And if I did anything wrong, if I lie, cheat, steal, do any of these, commit any of these sins, when I die, I'll go to hell. Grandmother told me that hell was a big hole off over here in the ground, and there was a fire in it, and that fire burns all the time. And when I die, if I've committed any of these sins, then I'll be thrown into this pit of fire, and there I'll burn forevermore. Well, I become afraid right then and there. Then after I did commit these sins, I knew The grandma's right. She can't be wrong. Now, I'm going to be thrown into this pit of fire. And I was afraid. Afraid I was going to die. Afraid of all moving things. And at the age of 13, grandmother did take very sick and die and left me all alone. I'll never forget the day. We were working out in a wheat field shocking wheat. Word came out that she passed away. All the other workmen got down on their knees and they began to pray for her poor soul. I couldn't pray. I didn't know how to pray. I just knew that I had been hurt. And all I could do was to cry. I was almost as tall as I am now, almost 6 foot tall. 13 years old. And I slipped away from the other workmen in the field and I went to the house. I didn't want anybody to see me cry, so I slipped into the fruit cellar where we kept our fruit stored. Now the next thing that happened changed the entire pattern of my natural life. For some unknown reason, this happened. Maybe God knew what he was doing. I'll accept it there. I don't know. But I do know that I sat down and I began to cry, and for some unknown reason, I reached upon the shelf and there was a quart fruit jar full of old corn whiskey. Now, up to this time, I had never tasted alcohol that I can remember of. And very little did I drink of it then. But I tasted it and it was very hot. I'd taken the quart fruit jar and I went out to the spring where we carry our drinking water from, where a stream of water came out of the side of a mountain. And I sat down and I began to take little sips from this here, from this jar. I don't know how much I drank. It probably wasn't much, but I would chase it with this cold spring water. Well, I went to sleep. I passed out. But before I did, this is what I experienced. Something that stayed with me from a natural. It was a feeling that I got. After taking a few drinks, I wasn't afraid anymore. The tears stopped and I didn't have to cry. And oh Lord, how I like that. I didn't have to be afraid, and it was the first time as long as I could remember that I wasn't afraid. From the night that the man walked in and my mother laid me on a bed and my mother walked out the home with another man, I become afraid. But then I didn't have to be afraid anymore. I could stand up and look the world in the eye. We buried Grandma, but I wasn't there. I liked the feeling so much that I got. I had to sample it again. But when I did wake, they had me under an old-fashioned pump of pumping water on me. 2 or 3 days went by, and we had to cross the river to take Grandma over on the hillside to bury her. And we had nothing but team and wagon. And we put big poles up on this because the river was up and we had to get the casket across the river. I helped put her up there. And I couldn't stand it anymore. And I slipped back to the cellar again. And I didn't attend to the funeral. As much as I loved her, that's how I loved her. Yes, she played a big part in me coming here and being with you tonight. I'll tell you about that later on in my story. Then time just seemed to go by. I didn't go to school much. I had no one to make me to go to school. If I choose to go, I go, and if not, I don't. And I choose not to go as any little boy would. So I grew up pretty ignorant. Didn't know much. And all I had was what the good Lord gave me, a good body. And being an alcoholic, I wasn't lazy. I have never yet met a true alcoholic and him be a lazy man. I have never done it. Well, I grew up down in the Ozarks, shifting around from place to place. When I was about 16 years old, I left the Ozarks and I went into Kansas City, Missouri. I went down into the Sheffield Steelyard. And an old German, I told him my story, and an old German adopted me. And he was an iron worker down in the Sheffield Steel. And there he made an iron worker out of me, and I was with him for years. Now, please don't think that I'm bragging again. But through him, he made one of the finest iron workers and bridge builders out of a man that could be made. I don't say that to be bragging. I say it because it is the truth. Because I think that an alcoholic, he is a perfectionist, and if we can't do something a little bit better than someone else, then we want no part of it. And you see, there was something against me, too. I had no education, and the only thing I could do was to use my hands and what few brains the good Lord gave me. So I used them. I worked very hard, and I climbed the ladder, and I did become an iron worker. Built many bridges throughout the country. But drinking went along with it all the time. But being young and having a good body, I could drink all night and work all day. But the time came when I couldn't, and it came pretty early in life. At the age of 24, I experienced my first DT. At the age of 32, I experienced my first convulsion. At the age of 37, I experienced something that not too many of us experience, and that's facing a life blind, totally blind, for 17 long months. But I'll get into that later on, too. I became a pipeline worker in depression. I had to play a little bit of everything to make things meet. So I became a pipeliner, and I worked very hard. I've laid many, many miles of pipe across this country. Most everybody that has ever did any pipelining through this country does know me and know of me at one time or another. Now, in 1932, I came into Topeka, Kansas on a construction job, a pipeline job, and there is where I met the woman who is with me tonight. And on the 26th day of September of 1934, she became my wife. For richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health. But I just wonder if she knew just how sick a man I was when she married me. Just wonder if she ever dreamed of all the heartache and tears for her and those poor little babies. Yes, it continued to get worse, and there was nothing I could do about it. I'd even get off by myself and hide, get in the dirt on my face and pray to God to show me a way that I didn't have to drink anymore. I used to say that I'd pray for him to take me away, but I didn't really, because I didn't want to die. But I didn't want to make my family suffer. I didn't want to get hurt myself, but I always did. Yes, I've been married 27 years, soon be, and half of my life have been behind bars from the use of alcohol. Never a felony on me in my life. and half of my life spent behind bars from the use of alcohol. Could I drink much? No. What little I drank, it harmed me a great deal. I made a vow when I married this girl that I'd tell her nothing of my past, that I would just never drink again. And through fear of her knowing that what a kind of a man that I was, I didn't drink for 3 long years. 3 years through fear. But no time of that was happiness. I continued to think of alcohol, very irritable, getting meaner by the day. And in 1937, on March the 17th, I'd taken my drink. My second daughter was born by that time, and I had quit construction. My wife's father had a grocery store, and he asked me to come in with him and work with him, that he thought I would be better off, and that he wanted to keep his daughter at home instead of making a pipeline tramp out of her, or a steel tramp, dragging her in a trailer or something all over this country. So I stayed, and I lived 3 years in hell. When my second daughter was born, we put 3-2 beer into the grocery store, and that's when 3-2 beer was legalized in the state of Kansas. And I sampled a bottle of Budweiser beer. From 1937 until 1949, I never drew a sober breath unless I was locked up or in a hospital or someplace where I couldn't get to alcohol. Now let's make a long story short, because it is a bunch of heartaches and tears that go along. Let's bring me up, because I continued to get sicker and sicker. And the children and the wife begin to get poorer and poorer. Lack of the proper food, the proper clothing, the proper schooling. My 2 oldest daughters didn't get out of life what they were, should have got. Neither of these girls received a high school education. My other 2, they did. My youngest daughter and my son. But let me tell you now about some of the real heartaches and tears. Let me tell you about some of the most wonderful things that could ever happen to any human being walking upon this earth. Let me tell you what some of the things that happened to me, Lloyd Miller, as it happened back in Christ's time when he walked the face of this earth. Do I believe? Yes, I believe. Is there a God in heaven? Yes, there's a God in heaven. Is there a hell? Yes, there's a hell. I've seen it. I've been in it. I lived in it for 15 long years. Knocked until it opposed. And I went back to construction after I started drinking. And I began to build the bridges again. And I began to burn them all behind me. I began to lay in the pipeline. I began to making the big money again. But Mama and the children didn't see any of it. Very little. And friends, I didn't drink because I wanted to drink. I didn't treat her and those children like I did because I wanted to. I could not help it. Now, we finally wound up in San Bernardino the fourth day, the second day of October in 1944. Now, let me leave out this from way back there and just give you San Bernardino the worst of it. So many of us don't like to hear about this here under the bridge and this Skid Row stuff and the winos and the dinos and the dingbats. We don't like to hear any of that, but friends, this is my story. This is me. This is part of me. And I can't flower it up. I can't give you a beautiful story. I can't tell you about the champagne I drank because I was a wino. I was one of the most strongest alcoholics, I believe, that ever walked the face of the earth. Why do I say this? I say this because I had an obsession for alcohol stronger than anything on the face of this earth, barring nothing. My wife, my four children, anything on the face of this earth. My wife, right away after we got to San Bernardino, I drank in so heavy. Trying to carry on with my ironwork. My wife, she had to go to work to support the children. I had got a job with a construction firm who had some iron work at San Bernardino Airport. Out at the airport, I was putting up a water tank one day and threw me being drunk on the job, a man slipped and fell and was killed. This man had three little tow-headed kids. That's my last work. That's the last day's work I ever done on the face of this earth. Why? Nobody would have me. My wife wouldn't speak to me. My kids wouldn't speak to me. I would be pointed out on the street by the parish priest. My friends, my wife, point me out and say, there's old Wino Miller, scoop him up off the street and dump him in the garbage pile. Why did she say this? It had been many and many a month before since I had brought in my paycheck to help support the family, so she had to seek ways and means of getting rid of me. My wife, folks, was in law work all her life, so she was having a good education. She went to Sheriff's doctor and told him her what was wrong, and he gave her a job as deputy sheriff. Many a time that woman arrested me and threw me behind bars. You know the old saying, if you're in your own home and in bed, they can't take you out? Well, don't you fool yourself. They can do it. I know it. Now, this county jail alone, this is some of the sad stuff that some of you don't like. And I lay there in that one cell on that concrete slab for some 581 days, 6 months at a time. But you see, my wife was a secretary to the judge. And I'd walk up there And it was all cut and dried that Lloyd, to save his life, will give him another 6 months. And I got it. And it did save my life. And then I went to the road camp 9 different times, 13 times to the psychopathic ward, 3 times to this mental institution. I'm going on through here now, and I'm only going to hit the heartaches and tears. I'm going to tell you guys about that great big hurt that will get away down deep. You know what I'm talking about when I tell you about that big hurt we alcoholics get away down there. I'm going to tell you about it. Now, some of you haven't had it quite that deep. But you see, here's a funny part of it. If you keep drinking, you can have that big hurt way down deep, just as deep as I got it. But if you stop, you know that the big hurt ain't going to go no deep. We know that. So, let me tell you about it. I don't know, maybe I was a sissy. But if loving your family the way I love my family was a sissy, then I am a sissy. But I love them very dear. When I first met this girl, she gave to me something that I never had in my life. She gave me a feeling of a mother, a feeling of a sweetheart, a feeling of a wife, of all of these things in one woman. And I kind of feel that all alcoholics kind of lean that way towards a wife. And she was my sweetheart, she was my wife, she was my grandmother, she was everything in the world to me. Oh, I was... As far as having a mate, I was very happy with this mate. But not with myself or my problems. Now, it seems like that I could get along pretty good during the daytime with the other winos down on Skid Row. I'm sitting under a rainy bridge. But when nighttime comes and these other boys had the same problem, they begin to find a shelter, some place to get in out of the weather, a room or back of an old automobile or under the bridge or something. Well, I felt so alone. And I'd get me a supply of wine after dark, and I'd go to my wife's home. I knew I couldn't go in it because I had been given restraining orders not even to speak to her or the children upon the street. I would go under the house. Not in the house, but under. And I'd lay there and I'd drink from my wine bottle until I passed out. One day, the police got told they didn't want me. They didn't want me to shame my wife and the children. My wife working up there knew everybody and she had a lot of friends. And they just didn't want me up there, and especially when I lost my eyesight. Policeman come along one day. And I was feeling my way around with a cane. I had gotten a hold of some bad wine and malnutrition, and this taken my eyesight. And they felt very sorry for me, so they quit picking me up and throwing me in jail and doing any of this time. And I would feel my way around with an old stick. So one day, a policeman came by and stopped and put 50 cents in my hand. Many times did this. They'd feel sorry for me and give me 50 cents and tell me to get off of the street and make my way someplace. Well, I got me a bottle of wine and I waited till dark. And I got down into an irrigation ditch in my wife's home, was across the street from the air base there. And it was the last house on the street, and that's why I could get to it and under it so easy. And I make my way down this irrigation ditch, and I go under.
In this last time, I had passed out. Dr. Nevins of San Bernardino removed over 2/3 of my stomach and my gallbladder, all from the use of alcohol. And through a drunken brawl, I got out one evening and I got into a fight with a young man, and he pulled out a .38 pistol and he shot me clear through and through, shot my left lung clear out. Now, all of these things happening to me, you would think, well, a fella certainly would quit. But it seems like I had more problems and everything, so I drink more. Well, this particular time and the last time that I got my jug, I went under the house. Why did I go under the house? I can remember back. It gave me a good feeling inside to hear the little kids running around fussing in the house and the wife hollering at them. It just seemed like I was right in there with them. That's the great obsession of this disease. So I passed out that night, or I went to sleep, and the next morning I woke up. These bleeding ulcers had broke open again, and I was laying in a pool of my own blood. My daughter, who is an alcoholic, who is in Georgia tonight, she's been there for a while, and she's had a terrific time with this alcohol. The other three doesn't even drink. But for some reason, this gal is 24 years old. She's already been in two mental institutions and heading for another one. She tried to kill herself. Her husband tried to kill her Sunday night down in Georgia. These things real hurt. We real deep. Think that you have a beautiful kid like that, 24 years old, and he's falling right in your footsteps, and you can't do a thing about it. There's nothing you can do but do like you've done years ago. Get on your face and pray to God that some way, somehow, somebody's going to come along and give it to her as it was given to me. She's the little gal that looked under the house and seen her dad laying in a pool of his own blood. She ran to Mama, and Mama called the ambulance, and they brought the ambulance, and they strapped me down to a litter, and they took me to the South Traffic cell again, the 13th time in the same cell. And there they strapped me down. And there I lay for 17 long days and nights, going through the DTs, the convulsions, and all you have. I still got big holes in my jaws, big holes in my tongue where I chew my tongue and my jaws and swallow it. Lay there and babble like an idiot for days. And then to look up and see the woman you love, the woman that you'd married years ago, the mother of the kids that you love so dear, and see her pulling you up, her and someone else, off of a psychopathic bed and dragging you before the judge again. And her telling the judge all about our married life and all about the horrible things that I did. And while I was there the 17 days, seven psychiatrist doctors of the state of California examined me, and each and every one of them pronounced me a mental, insane alcoholic who would never recover. And I went before the judge, and my wife there holding me up before the judge, a blind, hopeless, chronic, insane alcoholic. And the judge is saying, I sentence you, Lloyd E. Miller, to a mental institution with no hope or little hope of ever recovering, of ever seeing the outside world again. And again, for the third time, they took me to the mental institution, and there I was strapped down again. And there I lay for 7 months and 14 long days in this one little South Traffic cell. Fellas, I know what alcohol is. I know what it can do to Lloyd Miller. And you can go the same route if you choose to go.
If God Almighty sees fit, you go there. Or you'll quit drinking. But you know, the most wonderful thing happened to me.
Fellas, I can't stand up here and tell you and be honest to me that I'm glad I'm an alcoholic. I can't do it. With all the heartache and tears for all of these years, but I am so grateful to the bottom of my heart to think that the good Lord brought something along that would give me peace of mind and happiness to share with you, to give my wife and my children the peace of mind that they deserve. But I can't tell you that I'm happy, that I am an alcoholic, but I can tell you I'm so grateful that there is Alcoholics Anonymous for a man like me. I didn't want to be an alcoholic for all the heartaches and tears for my wife and for me and all. But I found a way to find God because I was an alcoholic, and I give you thanks for that. But a man like me to stand up and tell you that I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic, I can't do it. After 4 months, then blind.
A Catholic priest, San Diego, Father Mac, many, many of you know him. He's known throughout the country.
He came into this here psychopathic cell. He said he wanted to talk to me. And I'll never forget the words he said. He did tell me that he was an alcoholic. See, here, a lot of this is so much like a dream. He told me that he was an alcoholic. He told me that he had bum pennies on Skid Row for his wine, the same as I. For some reason, I felt good. He said he'd come to talk to me for a little while, but I listened. Would I listen? Nobody had. I'd seen no one for months. The man talked, and he read, and he reread chapter 5 to me. And he told me that no human being could make the sun come up or go down. But he told me that I would have to find this power myself. He told me many, many things I don't have time to tell you in the way of teaching me. 7 months and 14 days later from the first time that I walked into the cell, I walked out. But this is what happened. This is what happened. That it happened like back in Christ's time. It can happen. And he left me. One evening, I got up on my knees and I told, not God. He said, this priest told me that I must pray to something I love very dear, and the love still remains in my heart tonight, very strong for this woman we laid away in 1928. And I loved her so dear. And it was so plain that Grandma was in that room with me, that I got on my knees and I told Grandmother how sorry I was for all the wrong that I ever did. And with the help of this great man, with the help of this great book, and many of you, you taught me what was wrong with me, you taught me what I could do about it. And for some unknown reason, I choose to believe that God knew what he was doing, though, to put me through all of this. I think that he knows. And I got on my knees and I prayed to Grandmother. And I laid down on this psychopathic bunk and I went to sleep, and I slept 8 hours without sedation or alcohol in my body. I woke the next morning. Call it anything you want to call it. I call it the work of Almighty God. And I'm not ashamed to use the word. And I'm no guy, a sawdust trail guy. I'm not always jumping on my knees and praying, but I just believe and I just know that these things happen.
Why they happen, I don't know. But I know they happen.
The next morning, I seen the sun come up. 17 long months that I hadn't seen the sun come up or go down. 17 months I've took my way around. I've been bathed and shaved and fed and clothed and led around like a little kid. But I did see the sun come up. My eyesight came back. And he kept coming back. This alcoholic priest kept coming back. He kept teaching me these wonderful things of life. But from that night on, I got this kind of a feeling. It didn't matter to me whether I was in the psychopathic cell, whether I was in the line, the march, and the chow, whether they had come and got me and tucked me over and set me down in an AA meeting, or whether they had me in a picture show, or whether they had me out working, whether they had me any place. I had the same feeling wherever you put me. A calm feeling. Just not elated, but a happy feeling. On the 12th day of December of 1950, this Catholic priest came to me, and I asked him if he thought that there would be some way, somehow, again, I might be released sometime. I didn't know when or if ever, because I had been sentenced there by 7 psychiatric doctors. I had been sentenced there as a hopeless chronic insane alcoholic with a deterioration of the brain. And in the state of California, that's right. I had done so much jail time in my time that I had figured this is it. I will be here to remain. But again, the miracle happened. This here Catholic priest went to the governor of the state of California and was given permission to take me before an entire staff of 31 doctors of Patton State Hospital, Patton, California. And I told them my entire story. And on the following day, the 13th day of December of 1950. Now, during this time, my wife, too, had been learning what was wrong with me because you, the AA member, had been teaching her. And they called her and they said, if you want him, come get him. We have no more to offer him. And on the 13th day of December, my wife held my hand. And we walked out of those gates of Patton State Hospital almost 11 years ago. And I turned my eyes to the sky, and it's the first time I'd ever walked out of a place in my life, and I've been locked up many times. Thank you, God. And I have tried my best in every way I know how, with what few brains I got, to do what I'm taught to do by this wonderful program. It gave to me life itself. It gave to me happiness beyond my dreams. I can live, and I can love, and I can be loved, and I can understand now, and I can be understood by all of you. It's the most wonderful feeling when somebody says, come on back, we need you, we want you. And that's what this great man said to me. When I was there in that psychopathic cell, a very sick man, he said, come on back. We need you, we want you. Now, isn't it great that you wanted me tonight? Isn't it great that I had the opportunity to come and talk and visit with you? Because I know that I don't have too much time left on the face of this old earth. And what time I have got left, I want to do all I can in all my power to pay back to you and this wonderful program for what it has done for me, Lloyd Miller. Friends, there's a great, great deal more of this story. It goes on and on and on and away into the night. There is no ending to my story, and there really isn't any beginning. But I'm so grateful that I can tell you part of it. I'm so grateful that I have one of the most understanding mates that God ever made. Another thing I think that makes a difference, she loves me, and I love her. Now I have four of the proudest kids that you've ever seen. They love their daddy very, very much. And they understand that I didn't treat them that way for 15 long years because I wanted to. Friends, come on back. You don't know when you turn that next drink up, but what if you're lasting? If any of you's ever down around San Bernardino, drop in at 656 D Street and make a 12-step call on me because I need you. What do I need you? I got 75 other sick men there 24 hours a day. I need your help. I say there is much, much more to my story. But I've run out of time again. But maybe sometime, if you like me, maybe you'll ask me back again sometime and I can tell you just a little more of what this dreaded disease of alcoholism done to four of the finest kids that God ever let breathe. One of the finest mates. And all the heartaches and tears. And I appreciate it so much if you'll just kind of listen to the other side tonight. You know, you hear a great deal of the alcoholic and the pains that he went through. But these heartaches and tears, so please listen to my wife for a little bit. May God bless you. May he keep you. Sober and happy just as long as you live. Thank you very much.
Folks, we've almost run out of time. We have a business report to get in before the meeting, but I do want you to hear this terrific woman for just 5 minutes, please.
Hello, everyone. I'm Helen Lloyd Twice, and I'm a non-alcoholic, and it is indeed a pleasure to be here at the Palm Springs group tonight because, you see, we owe all that we have accumulated in these past 10 years, the many happy hours of happiness, peace of mind, and sobriety, to people just like you at meetings just like this all over the country. Because if people like you had not been at meetings when we were seeking help so desperately, I don't know where we would be tonight. I would like very quickly to describe to you this picture. This picture will tell you of our life of these past 26 years. I would be very foolish to tell you that this has been an easy life. It has been a simple life. But any wife of a practicing alcoholic knows what I mean when I say that it is impossible to eat normally, sleep normally, or conduct a normal marriage when alcohol reigns as king in your home. And this is our story. As Lloyd told you, that the space down in the center, down at the bottom, is where it is all green, is the 3 short years that he described to you as being very irritable, very unhappy, although still not having resulted to drinking. As you will see, we were living together, yet we were growing apart. And this is true in so many homes. This possibly will fit many of your families. And so as the years went by, and as we know, the disease of alcoholism is a progressive illness. It got worse, never better. And so we noticed here the old rocky road, as you will see, and this is the daily life of the alcoholic. When he's seeking for another 50 cents, when he's waking up with the shakes, when he's got the cold sweat, when he's trying to get to the bar, he's so sick he thinks he's going to die, and he wishes at times he could, and afraid that he will. And so he gets that 50 cents in his hand, and he has the security, just waiting till he gets that next drink. On my side, you will see the old rocky road, and this is the life that a wife, a non-alcoholic, can experience as a mother, and as I say, as a wife. Because on this old rocky road is knowing what it is like when your bills come due, you have no funds, the groceryman says, sorry, no more credit, you didn't pay the last bill. The landlord is knocking at your door and telling you it is time to move because your rent is not paid from the month before. When your children bring their shoes and cardboard to you and ask you, Mama or Daddy, please cut a piece for my foot to keep my foot warm. These are the things that you wonder about. These are the things that make you wonder. You cannot understand. When your husband will say, honey, I love you and the kids more than anything else in the world, and then reach and take another drink. This is confusing, believe me. So as the years progress, you will see that there is an object, a bottle, and on this bottle is a four-letter word that says wine. This is our problem. And for many years, it had been our problem. And so, as you see, we grew farther and farther apart on down the years through our married life. And then you will see that here we have entitled the new rocky road, the new superhighway, rather than the old rocky road. And this is the road that we travel, like from San Bernardino down here tonight. This is what takes us to meetings everywhere, to meet friends just like you. You have made our new life. So this new superhighway led us up to a bridge that Lloyd built for himself, an imaginary bridge, and we call this his AA bridge. And so by building this bridge, he was able to span our problem, the bottle. Now, he was so sick when he came home from the hospital, it was necessary for him to have on this bridge some handrails. So on this bridge, he placed 12 handrails, and these are their 12 steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And by walking very carefully, he was able to reach the children and myself. And it was necessary for him to give us something to believe in, because we had believed so many times, and he had failed so many times. So he built for himself a pipeline of faith, and he hung it to his AA bridge, thereby giving us faith in God, faith in our fellow man, and faith in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that my husband is an alcoholic. He will be an alcoholic until the day he dies. I know this. I must accept this. And as a wife of an alcoholic, I cannot be ashamed of the fact that I am married to an alcoholic, no more than if he were a victim of diabetes, cancer, or TB. I know I cannot keep my husband sober, but I can help to keep him in a state of mind to where he will want to stay sober. I must always be careful, because if his thinking should become stinking, he might slip from his AA bridge down into the pit of insanity, despair, and death. And in closing, as I have always said, that without God's help, we can do nothing. But with God's help, there's nothing we can't do. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. Please check out our website at sobrietytalks.com. You can also contact us by sending an email to sobrietytalks@aol.com. Thank you.